Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired November the 2nd, 2012. Jake and I get together every Saturday and do this audio review for you guys and talk about what's happening on SmackDown, the good and the bad. But it's not the only audio that's produced each week here for you at ProWrestling.net. There's a ton of audio, but almost all of it is exclusive to our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw review. Will Pruitt does a TNA Impact Wrestling review, also on Fridays, and sometimes that one is all access. Jake and Will get together during the week to do the .NET Countdown, where they look at the best and the worst across all of professional wrestling for the week. Jason answers questions from members, both wrestling and non-wrestling, on his Friday Q&A audio. And then Jason and I get together every Thursday for .NET Weekly. It's our flagship show. We look at all the news of the week. That is available in part this week in all access to give you guys a sample of what we do there. To talk about our new app as well, our new audio app. Hopefully some of you are listening to it on this. If not, definitely check that out on iTunes. A lot of stuff we produce here each week. We do a ton of interviews as well. There's all kinds of old interviews on the site for you guys to listen to. Chris Jericho is on there. Ring of Honor World Champion Kevin Steen is on there. Number of different interviews for you guys to listen to. All of that's available in our audio archive for our members. And, you know, we've added something new. Besides the app on the free side, our members now have an app as well. Something new there. We've just updated the forum. Just all kinds of great stuff there with a new marketplace where you can buy things. You can earn dollars by participating in the forum and then use those dollars to bet on events that we set up for you guys and, you know, buy all kinds of neat things in the forum with that. There's some games built in there. Just major changes to the member side. It's a great time to sign up to be a .NET member. You'll get access to all of that audio, the ad-free version of the site, the new .NET member forum, the new .NET member blog section as well. All of those things are available for just $7.50 a month. If you know you want to take an annual option, we'll knock $2 off each month, take you down to $5.50 each month. It's a great time to sign up, and all you got to do, just head on over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page. You'll see a red link there that says .NET member sign up. Click there, and we will get you started. Again, come check out all the new stuff. It's been 2 weeks of just fun watching everything get updated. The new forum looks great. Lots of new features there. It's a lot of good stuff going on right now at .NET for our members. So go ahead right now. Just press pause. Wherever you are, press pause. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Sign up to be a .NET member and get access to all of those things right now. Let's go ahead and bring in Jake and talk about this show, this SmackDown show. It was taped on October the 30th in Fayetteville, North Carolina, about 2.5 miles from me. And they had a pretty good crowd that night for a very interesting show. Our biggest complaint for the longest time, Jake, I think you and I agree on this, that the main problem with WWE creatively is that outside of 1 to 3 storylines, usually whatever Punk's doing, whatever John Cena's doing, if they're doing something separate, which they are now, and maybe the World Heavyweight Championship feud. Outside of those three feuds, we don't get anything. You know, everything else in the undercard is mostly ignored. It's very, very paint by numbers, very minimalistic. We don't get any real great time for these guys to go out there and try to make names for themselves, to develop their characters. And this week on SmackDown, Jake, I think they did a pretty good job. We talked about it before we started recording. There were only a handful of segments this week. It was the full 2-hour show aired, but they did very few things and let those things run long and give people some time. Kofi Kingston got time on the mic. We saw, you know, different guys out there working in the tag division. So I was really impressed with the show taking some time to highlight some of these other stars that normally don't get a lot of time.
Yeah, that was one of the, you know, the real positive outcomes of this show, is that they did spend quite a bit of time focusing specifically on the people that are going to be in that Team Foley versus Team Punk Survivor Series match. You know, they had Miz and Kofi, you know, drawn back and forth in the opening segment, along with Big Show and Sheamus, and then they had the two tag teams, the tag teams, the Primetime Players and Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio. They were also featured as continuing a feud, and Sin Cara and Mysterio were in that Survivor Series match, and then Orton and Del Rio kind of continued their stuff. So, I mean, they did quite a bit on this show to focus on creating, you know, some story and some depth to the characters that are going to be in that big Survivor Series elimination match. So I thought it was a pretty well-done effort on that part. I mean, I didn't exactly like everything that they did, but, I mean, I do have to give them credit for putting in an honest effort, and it's more than we usually get, so I think it's a move in the right direction.
Yeah, one correction is Team Hell No that's on the Team Foley side, not Sakaar and Rey Mysterio. They are locked in that feud with the primetime players, and like you said, they were given time and able to go out and kind of build on their feud. You've got Kofi Kingston getting actual mic time, an opportunity to speak. I'd almost forgotten what his voice sounded like until he won the Intercontinental Championship again. But they seem committed to allowing him some time to go out there and catch his, or see what he can do with his character, see if he can catch it on fire with the fans. You know, the only real complaint I have as far as a segment that seemed to be kind of wasted, I mean, there was the backstage stuff with Kay Long and whatnot that we'll talk about, but really the Justin Gabriel and R-Truth match is the only match that kind of stood out as random and not connected to anything else. Everything else seemed to have a real purpose. They made Wade Barrett look good. At the same time, they continued the feud with Orton and Del Rio. I liked the brawl they had backstage. Overall, I thought it was a very effective SmackDown. But more than anything, I think for me, and it was right out of the gate, I was hoping for it, but never actually believed that we would get it. We're starting to see a little bit of Edge come back to Sheamus. You and I have complained consistently, and I think a lot of people have, that he had become this, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, silly, almost John Cena with an Irish accent on some level, where he would just kind of make these corny jokes and tell these silly stories. I refer to it as selling cereal. I said, he became the Lucky Charms leprechaun so many times. And immediately out of the box, and at the end of the show in the main event, you get a frustrated Sheamus who just wants to kick somebody's tail. He still had a few lines in there, so I'm not jumping up and down for joy, but I have to say I was real encouraged. They seem to be wanting to use this story with Big Show to give him that edge back, to allow him to be a little more serious, and I think that's nothing but good for Sheamus going forward. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, I agree, and thanks for the correction on the brain part on Team Hell No. But the Sheamus and Big Show storyline has been interesting. I think it turned a really good corner at the pay per view. I was nowhere near impressed with the build up to Hell in a Cell, and they had a surprisingly good match at the pay per view. And since then, I think Big Show is much more suited to his current character, which is the confident heel champion, and Sheamus was much better as a character that had a little bit of fire and edge to him, and I think they're moving them both in that direction with, Big Show consistently, kind of getting the better of Sheamus and him having to fight, some adversity and showing some frustration. I think that's where he has succeeded in the past, it appears at least that that's the direction they're going, so it is a positive outcome in that regard. Before Hell in a Cell, I was just kind of hoping that this feud would mercifully end soon afterward. But I think they're in kind of a zone now where they're making progress, and I actually do want to see a rematch out of it too.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen the Big Show and Sheamus match from Hell in a Cell, I cannot express how much you need to find a way to see that match. Wait for it to come out on iTunes and pay for that match. Buy the DVD. Buy the replay. Whatever you've got to do to see that match, I cannot recommend it enough. Jason Powell, that night in our audio review, said that he felt like it was a WrestleMania-quality match for the World Heavyweight Championship, and I couldn't find a way to disagree with him. If that had been the match on a WrestleMania show with those two guys for that title, I easily would have accepted that. That was a surprisingly good match, easily match of the night on the card. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check that out, Hell in a Cell. One thing that this does kind of point out to me, Jake, and then we'll go through the whole show, but we saw it twice in the show. Del Rio has started to gain a little bit of his credibility back as a dominant heel, or at least as a badass heel. He jumped in, he attacked Orton. Yes, he got beat up a little bit, but he cost Orton the match. Petey, you know, he put Orton out for a little while there. They've had a good feud where he's not necessarily looked weak. He did get beat up in the back. That was fine. They were putting heat back on Orton. I was really okay with that. But we're seeing a little more credibility in Del Rio, and we're seeing what a credible heel in Big Show is doing for Sheamus in just one show of having the title. To me, more than anything, it shows the glaring problem in WWE that we've talked about many, many times, that they're just, they don't have great heels. They have weak, weak, weak heels. And I understand they're a babyface-driven company, and I'm really okay with that, but you have to have great heels for those great babyfaces to stand in opposition to, and they've watered their heel pool down so much and made everybody such chicken shit heels that, you know, it's hurting their baby faces across the aisle. And then tonight, on this show, you get these two heels that, in one case, have a little bit more credibility, and in the other case, Big Show have a lot of credibility as these heels. And look what it's done to Randy Orton. Look what it's done to Sheamus. It's so compelling compared to everything else on the card. And the only difference between that and what we're seeing else on the card, at least in my opinion, is they have credible heels who are involved in these storylines. And I'm kind of hoping somebody sees that and runs with it, because the baby faces they have just have nobody to stand up against and that people want to see get beat up. And if there's nobody you want to pay to see get beat up, then you really don't care if you see the baby face. So it's this nasty, vicious circle that's hurting them. And I'm hoping they're going to see what they've done on SmackDown just in this week alone and continue to help their heels, give them some more credibility, make them stronger, and make them stand out. Because, Jake, you know, like you said, they had some good development here, and really those are the two stories that had the best development. Even Kofi Kingston, who stood up against Miz, and Miz has not been portrayed as the greatest heel, but he doesn't back down. He's still out there talking junk. And even though he got fed to Ryback, and that kind of took the heat off of their program at Hell in a Cell, I thought by coming out, doing the Miz TV moment, arguing with Sheamus and showing some great heel tendencies there, that even that helped elevate what's going on with he and Kofi. So, you know, again, you don't have to be a heel-centric promotion, but, Jake, you got to admit the best stories right now. You look at what's going on in all of WWE. You look at the best stories, even on the Raw side with CM Punk. He's a great heel. With John Cena, you've got Vicky Guerrero playing a great heel bit. I mean, those are the best stories. Why do they continue, you think, to weaken their heels when every time they have a great heel, everything around it looks better?
I don't know. Maybe it's just force of habit. Maybe it's a creative rut. I mean, it's not easy to illustrate, you know, why the approach that they've taken is flawed. I mean, if they were sending Ryback after, you know, the heel Chris Jericho that was in WWE for his latest run, they would have almost no heat on it because nobody believed that Jericho could even come close to defeating a monster babyface, and Ryback wouldn't have gained hardly anything from it. So, I mean, the fact that he's going after Punk is a clear illustration of what a strong heel could do for a wrestler, even one, you know, as unproven and green as Ryback is. And, you know, you pointed out quite a few other heels on the show, and I think Wade Barrett is on his way to becoming a strong, you know, main event heel in his own right. So I think there is a glimmer of hope that we're going to see a resurgence of strong heels on the show, and I'm looking forward to it because, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, it makes the babyface characters so much more interesting when they appear to actually be struggling out there instead of just you know, taking a cakewalk for a gold belt or something. You know, it's remarkable that they've gotten as far as they have with as weak heels as they have thus far. I mean, the difference between WWE now and where they were during the Attitude Era is astonishing. I mean, and the fact that they've maintained the revenue and ratings and pay-per-view buys that they have with the weak heels over the past 4 or 5 years is really amazing. And it's refreshing to see that they're kind of going back to an older approach, and I think it should work out for them.
Yeah, it's there it is, right there in black and white. Just look at how different SmackDown was this week compared to previous weeks when you had some good heels out there, some credible heels out there. They've got the right formula there if they want to do it. They just have to pull the trigger and do the right thing. So, but let's take this show from start to finish. Again, it was recorded on October 30th in Fayetteville, North Carolina. The show opened, we did a, I got to say, the very first opening video, You know, we get the replay, recap of stuff from Raw, or just a brief recap, and then we get Sheamus versus Big Show thing from Hell in a Cell. And what I didn't like about this, and it's such a minor thing, but to me, it's like one of those little things that really sticks out and just makes you kind of shake your head, is they did the voiceover, how will Sheamus respond to losing to Big Show with Hell in a Cell? We find out now. Yeah, you know, I mean, do we really need that, Jay? I mean, I realize it's a little thing. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it's those sorts of things. It was like TNA last week when I covered Impact. They did the Jeff Hardy internal monologue thing, which doesn't make sense to me because you're supposed to be watching something that's at least based in some semblance of reality. Why can I hear his internal thoughts? This is for a different reason, but it's kind of the same thing where starting out of the box, I'm already taken out of the moment because we have this kind of silly over-the-top voiceover, or am I just making mountains out of moments?
I didn't really buy it either. I mean, I think they were maybe going for a sports feel, or like the NFL film voice or something like that to try to get people pumped up or what they're about to see. But it did feel a little out of place on a wrestling show where it's supposed to be somewhat unpredictable, and they kind of forecasted exactly what was going to happen in the opening segment. So I guess I could go either way on it. Maybe it's not as big of a deal as we're making it out to be, but it did feel out of place on the wrestling show. I would rather they do something similar to what they've been doing on Main Event, where they, where they actually do the video promo segments and turn it into the backstage interviews and in-ring interviews. That stuff seems to work for me, but this felt like a weird adaptation of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just it made it seem too much like a TV show to me, if that makes any sense, but I get accused all the time of blowing things out of proportion, so we'll move past it. Tony Chillo introduces Miz, who's already in the ring for Miz TV. He said there was a lot of controversy in WWE. He ran through all the different things that was going on in the AJ and Cena situation. They keep referring to it as, did Cena have an affair with AJ? But to have an affair, doesn't somebody there have to be married? And why would you? I mean, am I wrong about that? It seems kind of funny to me. They keep referring to this as an affair, but is it really an affair? I mean, did Vicky have an affair with all the guys that she hooked up with, or is that just? Do you see what I'm saying? I just don't understand why they keep referring to it as an affair.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the semantics of it don't make a whole lot of sense. Maybe they're calling it an affair because AJ was in a position of authority and it's kind of taboo, or I don't know what they're trying to get across with it, but it does seem like a kind of a bizarre use of the word. I mean, especially, in the custom that people are used to using it in pop culture, it doesn't seem like it really fits.
Yeah, it goes back to when they first started the storyline, and I was just kind of shocked that they would let their golden boy go through these, even though obviously it didn't happen, just to go through these accusations were very surprising to me, and they keep going back to affair. I'm like, he just came off this divorce, guys. I don't know. I mean, as Jason said, they kind of live in a bubble, and they don't think that most people think about those sorts of things. And maybe they don't, but it still surprises me that they would put their golden boy through this kind of story. I kind of like it in theory, but it's still just a little bit surprising. But he talked about Brad Maddox and what happened, and he ran through all the different things. And he said, of course, Sheamus got knocked out by the Big Show, and then he introduced Sheamus as the former World Heavyweight Champion. Sheamus, they played a video of Sheamus hitting white noise on Big Show on Monday's Raw. Miz, it's been 6 months since we've seen Sheamus made his entrance. Miz went to Sheamus, it's been 6 months since we've seen you without your World Heavyweight Championship. He said he couldn't help but think how ashamed Sheamus must feel for getting knocked out and how he must feel like a loser. Sheamus came back and said, I don't see any titles around your waist. You promised to beat Kofi Kingston, but yet there's no Intercontinental Championship. Miz did his really bit for a minute, got the crowd going. He said the difference between Sheamus and Big Show when he and Kofi is that he's beaten Kofi before, and he's going to do it again to win his championship, but Sheamus has never beaten the Big Show. Sheamus said he was humbled by the loss. It certainly humbled him with the way it went down. He said that he would give him a better effort in Survivor Series, but then Miz cut him off. And it's worth pointing out, maybe I missed it on Raw. Did they announce this match for the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw, or was this the announcement when he said, I'll do better in Survivor Series?
Yeah, I don't remember them announcing it on Raw. It just kind of felt like they voiced it right into the middle of this promo segment. But maybe we both missed it, and I just didn't I didn't recall it from Monday.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't remember it either. I was like, wait, did they just announce the world title match? Is that how they did that? It was almost like when HBK was added to the was a special referee at WrestleMania. It was kind of an uneventful announcement. This was kind of the same thing. It was like, wait, are they? I mean, we all assumed that was going to be the rematch at Survivor Series, but I don't remember an official announcement. And this is how they say it. But Sheamus promised that he would be better at Survivor Series. Miz said that Miz cut him off though, and he said that he couldn't help but feel like he was responsible for what happened, because back at WrestleMania, he single-handedly defeated all these members of the other team to give John Laurinaitis power, and John Laurinaitis signed Big Show to an ironclad contract, which allowed him to come back and be the total beast that he's been, which led to Sheamus getting knocked out and losing his title. And as soon as he said it, I thought, here we go. Sheamus kind of smiled at him, and then he said, so wait, let me get this straight. What you're saying is that you're the person I should be kicking in the head right now? Which was the moment where I was like, oh, my God, they're actually going to do this. They're going to do this right. They're going to put some edge back on Sheamus here. Miz hid behind a chair, said that all this talk doesn't matter. He can see that Sheamus lacked confidence. He started to do his catchphrase. He said, because I'm the Miz, and Kofi Kingston's music kicked in at that point. Kofi came out with a microphone. He and Sheamus hugged for a moment. He said, he asked Miz how many times he had to kick him in the head before he knocked some sense into him. He said that, he'd beaten Miz three times or whatever, and at Survivor Series it would be no different. Of course, these two are not wrestling for the Intercontinental Championship, but they are on opposing teams in that Survivor Series match with Punk and Mick Foley. So he said Survivor Series would be no different. Miz said he was going to do the same thing at Survivor Series he did at WrestleMania that led to all this. He was going to lead his team to victory because he's the Miz and Big Show's music hit, which at this point I was kind of getting into it. I wondered how many times he could go down the path and have somebody's music cut him off. Big Show comes out, says that he agrees that something's wrong with Miz, and asks me, he goes, for example, why are you interviewing the former World Heavyweight Champion instead of the new World Heavyweight Champion? Miz said, you know what, you're right. He said, what was it like to knock out Sheamus? Show started, he goes, you know, when I took my big hand and balled it into a fist, Sheamus cut him off and told Show to come down to the ring, and he hit him with white noise again, just like he did on Raw. Show said he had nothing to prove and that Sheamus would get no more of him until they could meet, until they would match at Survivor Series, and then that would be the end of Sheamus. Just said, no, I'm not doing this, turn around and walk to the back. Miz tried to take that moment to attack Kofi, but he got dumped to the floor instead, and that was the end of the opening segment, with the one bizarre part at one point being when JBL, which I forgot to mention, JBL and Josh Matthews, of course, on commentary. They, in case you haven't heard, they've been announced as the permanent team. I'm sure JBL will be taking, you know, dates off as he does the climbing of the Seven Mountains for his charity in Aruba. But he is primarily going to be back on SmackDown full-time and working with Josh Matthews, which bodes nothing but well for Josh Matthews. I think he made Michael Cole a better announcer. I think he will make Josh Matthews a better commentator as well. So I'm looking forward to that. But it was weird at one moment when JBL was going, he's the Miz, he's awesome. And I'm thinking, did JBL just call the Miz awesome? That's something I never thought I would hear, even on television. I thought it was a clustered opening segment, but a good opening segment. My biggest thrill was that Kofi got a chance to get some promo time in. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. He's still a work in progress. He hasn't had much time on the mic, so it's going to take some time for him to really find his sea legs and get going there. He needs to drop the word man from his promo. The other thing was, you know, man, let me tell you something, man. You should do me a favor, man. Man, it was a little too much. And I say that knowing that I say things like really and whatnot too many times as well. So not passing judgment, just offering some suggestion there for what Kofi needs to improve. But, you know, it was cluttered, and it ultimately leads to the main event, but it wasn't a bad opening segment. I thought they did a lot of right things. Sheamus showing a little bit of edge, threatening to kick Miz's head off of what happened. Kofi getting an opportunity to do some mic work. So when it was over, even though it wasn't necessarily a great segment, I was very happy with it, and you seemed to like what they had as well.
Yeah, I especially like what they did with Sheamus and the Big Show. I thought they both were much more interesting in the characters that they're trying to portray post title match than they were before the title match. And yeah, I still don't think Sheamus is completely converted from the cereal seller, as you said. But I think he's moving on that path, and then maybe they're taking a slower approach to it, and that's not entirely a bad thing either. But I did think it was strange that Kofi mentioned kicking the Miz in the head. I don't know if you recall their match on. Well, you probably covered their main event match for the Intercontinental
yeah.
title, where I think Kofi actually did kick Miz pretty well flush in the head and put him out with what looked like a concussion or something. So I thought that was
actually on Raw 2 days.
Oh, was it? Okay, it was Raw
match. Kicked him right in the face. It was nuts.
Yeah. Okay. It was on Raw. So yeah, the. I thought it was funny that he alluded to that. And the Miz, he's very consistent on the mic, so it's hard to really argue with too many of his performances. Sometimes they don't give him a whole lot of material, but here I thought he was pretty good, and he had a lot of worthwhile things to say. So overall, it was a good opening segment that, I was surprised they didn't go into announcing a match as part of the segment, but that came later. And the opening segment was a good kind of starting point for the rest of the show.
And we got, after that, they started hyping what we did know. Wade Barrett versus Randy Orton for later. Rey Mysterio, Sin Cara made their entrance. After commercial, we got our, we had Booker T backstage first when he came back from commercial. He congratulated Big Show on his title match. Told him that he and Sheamus had a great match, and then, he had to do what was best for business. The fans wanted to see he and Sheamus in the ring, and so he was going to do that, but it was going to be a tag match. Booker booked Sheamus and Kofi Kingston versus Miz and Big Show for later in the show. No real surprise, though. Like you said, you kind of expected it before they went to commercial, but we did get it as soon as they came back, and that set up our main event, which we will talk about when we get there. Ray and Sin Cara were shown backstage for the commercial. Sin Cara makes his ring entrance after the commercial break. Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, the primetime players, also shown backstage for the break. Our first match of the night, Darren Young defeating Sin Cara at 4 minutes and 2 seconds. Finish on this comes. Sin Cara went for a head scissors. Young grabbed him, flipped him up, and reversed it into his gut buster finisher for the victory, a clean victory, and a pretty good match. Nothing great going on here, but a good match. Titus O'Neil grabs the mic, said that he was the big dog and he wanted to get in the ring with the little dog. He challenged Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio got into the ring right before commercial. And then after commercial, we had Rey Mysterio defeating Titus O'Neil in 2 minutes and 37 seconds. Sin Cara knocks Darren Young tries to get involved. Sin Cara knocks him down. Rey hits the 619, but Titus caught him. And so he picked him up, but then Rey slipped out, rolled him up for the victory. So I put those two together because they are connected. It's basically one big segment. Fun match between Titus and Rey, but again, very short, 2.5 minutes. So, not a lot of time there. But again, for all the complaints that we could throw in here, about Darren Young and Sin Cara being Rey Mysterio and Titus O'Neil being short, what we have is a definite tag team feud, and if they're starting to give non-title tag team matches some lift, some actual story behind them, you've got these two singles matches that tie in together. I mean, this does bode well for the tag division going forward, that they're having non-title match feuds in the tag division that actually mean something. Even if they weren't tag team matches, it's still these two tag teams, and when you put these together, each team gets a win. I like the people that got the win. It made sense. Rey Mysterio overcoming the Giant. Darren Young is the better worker of the two, so it makes sense for him to get the win. Like I said, there are things you can nitpick about this, but when taken as a whole, I really like what they had here.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Sin Cara and Young worked pretty well together. They didn't do a whole lot of storytelling in the ring. It was just kind of a whole bunch of spots. But for the most part, I thought what they did, they executed pretty well. I mean, they obviously have a lot of growth to do, both of them, when it comes to storytelling. But they definitely had a very competent match. And I think the difference in the Mysterio and Titus match, despite it being short, was that Rey is so much more experienced and so better at telling stories than the younger, less experienced wrestlers, but that match just came off better. And, you know, him overcoming the Giant was a predictable story, given Ray's past, and the feud kind of benefited from both matches. So I like where they're going, and I like the attention they're paying to the tag teams, and I like both of these teams. You know, I think they both could be, you know, potential title holders in the future. So, it'll be good for everybody, because the tag team division making a comeback takes a lot of stress off the other divisions on the show. So, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, you know, it's these are some good teams. You know, I think that Ray and Sin Cara work very well together. I think that Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, while still trying to hone that gimmick, work very well together. I think they're a credible and believable tag team together. You know, and like you said, you see Ray in there. You see, it's so funny, you know, Sin Cara and Darren Young, who Darren Young is the better worker of the two. Well, Sin Cara, you know, he can work. He's had some troubles, certainly, but, you know, he can work. That's one of the reasons why he was hired. And, you know, they have a passable match. And you get Ray in there with the less, I don't want to pick on Titus when I say this, but certainly the weaker of the two between he and Darren Young. I mean, I think even Titus would admit that Darren's a better worker than him. Just size, if nothing else. And yet Ray's ability to go in there and make the guys he's facing look like $1 million in the process, just shows you the talent that guy has. He's not a guy I ever want to see with a world championship run again, but you have to appreciate him for what he is. We get a plug for the recap of Ryback and Punk from Raw after the break. We get a video that recaps the screw job from Hell in the Cell with Matthews updating us that Brad Maddox was suspended indefinitely at WWE's main event, but will be on Raw to air his side of the story. And then we get the video that didn't recap what happened between Mick Foley and CM Punk. It completely replayed what happened between Mick Foley and CM Punk, the entire exchange, introducing everybody. It really bugs me. I don't mind long recaps so much. We see it happen all the time. You kind of get used to it. But it did get frustrated, Jake, when they play whole chunks of Raw. I didn't see anything cut out of that stood out to me as time taken away. They seem to replay every single second of that, and that frustrates me as a SmackDown viewer. Because, again, I ask the question, who is watching SmackDown that is not also watching Raw? When you look at the ratings and the number of people watching SmackDown is less than Raw, you have to assume that at least 90% of those people are watching both shows, especially when so much of SmackDown happens on Raw now. So with that being the case, why do they feel the need to not recap but replay 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes of video on SmackDown?
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just a lack of material. I can't believe they'd struggle to put more people on television. But yeah, I could almost see the argument to replay it if it was, you know, what SmackDown was a few years ago when it was on broadcast television, because there are people that would watch a broadcast show but don't have cable. And, you know, people do. There are people that don't subscribe to cable, so that would, you know, that I could understand. But this just seems repetitive, and it seems like it takes away from, you know, the opportunities you could give other wrestlers to go out there and have a match or something. I don't really understand it, and, you know, maybe somebody from WWE could give a better explanation. But from my viewpoint, just being a guy who watches the show from my couch, it is frustrating for a WWE fan that watches Raw to have to watch 8 minutes of the same show again when you're expecting original programs.
Yeah, you're right. I can hear the argument if it's on network television. There are few, but there are people who out there who do not have cable, could not see Raw. That makes sense to me. But when they're both on cable, you know, who has USA that doesn't have Sci-Fi? Nobody. They're all in the same tier. That's the way NBC Universal has it set up. So it just frustrates me. I don't mind recaps, and especially with that great video production team that they have, the way they can make things seem even bigger than what they were. That's cool. Go out there, have a great, put some music over top of it, cut in your pictures, have a great recap. But don't replay every second of it after I've already sat through it once. It just frustrates me. It's almost as frustrating as the garbage we get backstage on SmackDown. Eve wasn't there this week. This was taped while she was overseas. So they didn't have her to kind of hold everything together as being the core of the storyline. So instead, what we get is Booker T, Teddy Long, Natalia and David Otunga involved with two coffee spit takes that made absolutely no sense other than to spit coffee on friggin' Natalia and Teddy Long. This segment really aggravated the shit out of me. I mean, it did. Because it served absolutely no purpose. It set up David Otunga and Khali, but that's it. Other than that, it just allowed David Otunga to spit coffee on people, and I don't understand the fascination with silly-ass comedy like that. It doesn't add anything to the show. We get Teddy Long talking to Booker T. Natalia walks up and says, since he's not here, can I kind of serve in her place? She's all dressed up. David Otunga comes in with his coffee cup and dressed in his sweater. He kind of, you know, steps in front of Natalia, blocks her a little bit, says, you know, if you need anything, I'm your man, I'm your man. Booker says, well, if you're my man, I need you in a match tonight to face a returning superstar. Otunga says, okay, who? And starts drinking his coffee. Booker T says, great, Khali. He turns and spits the coffee all over Natalia, who, of course, is frustrated by this. Otunga tries to beg off. Booker T tells him to go get ready. He turns and looks at Natalia, and he goes, I said I was sorry. I don't know what you're so upset about. He starts drinking his coffee again. Natalia slaps him, which causes him to spit the coffee out. Now on to Teddy Long, who just stands there and fumes, and then we go to commercial. What in the blue hell did that do? It didn't put any heat on the match by having him spit on Teddy Long. It didn't do anything for Natalia to have her standing there covered in coffee. What you end up with are two people who got spit on by David Otunga, who nobody gives a shit about. What in the hell did they... I mean, what was the purpose of this, Jake?
You know, I couldn't tell you. The only thing that really stuck out to me in that segment is that after Otunga did the spit take on the Natalia shirt, I think he might have stared at her chest for a good 10 seconds before turning his gaze over to Booker T.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, that looks really creepy. But other than that, yeah, that was a pointless segment. I mean, and the match that happened later between Otunga and Khali was pointless. So, I mean, it just served to waste a couple of minutes of television. It was. I think I said in my report that I just couldn't care less about any of that, and that still stands. I mean, it was just a worthless few minutes of television that we'll never get back, so hooray.
I know. It's so friggin' frustrating. It doesn't make sense to me why they feel the need to just, I mean, it's like, first of all, they love to embarrass Natalia. I don't understand why. I guess it's because she's a thicker diva, and we've talked about that before, and that's frustrating as hell. But, okay, it's what they're going to do, but then they spit the coffee on Teddy Long, and I give two shits about Teddy Long. I've never liked him as a character. I don't think he's nearly as sympathetic as WWE thinks he is, which I think was proven with the whole Oksana and Antonio Cesaro storyline when Antonio stole her, and everybody was kind of like, okay. And just shrugged their shoulders, and nobody cared. Nobody cared that Teddy Long's heart got broken again. So, you know, he's not nearly as sympathetic as WWE likes to make him out to be. That notwithstanding, this just didn't make any sense. I simply didn't understand what the purpose was in doing all this. It didn't do anything. At least when there's camp comedy that's bad, but they're trying to do something, at least it's like, okay, they were trying to get from A to B. They picked a shitty route. This, there was no B to get to. It was just, why are we watching this? Why are these people covered in coffee? What did it do? Well, like I said, it didn't add anything to the match either, and I've probably railed on this much longer than they thought about it, but, you know, this was the one moment of the show where, the only real moment where I was like, God dang it, who the hell let these people write this show? I mean, there were some things that weren't great in other places in the show, but this is the only one where I was like, this is terrible, I cannot believe they put this on TV. So, but let's move past it. Out of that commercial break, Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez join the announced team. Wade Barrett and Randy Orton make their entrance. Josh Matthews all over Del Rio asking him questions. I thought too strong there. They should have backed him off some. He was very aggressive going after Del Rio, challenging him. JBL did a good job playing the heel commentator there, but I felt like Matthews was just a little bit too strong in the way he went after Del Rio before the start of the match. Before we talk about the match, I mean, do you like what Josh did there, or do you think that it was too strong as well?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, for a guy that's been assaulted repeatedly by various wrestlers and didn't appear to like it that much, I would think he would stop putting his hand in the bee's nest. But, that just seemed a little bit too strong because it kind of forced Del Rio's hand, and obviously that's what happened here. So,
it was just a little too much over the top. It's if you hear it, I think most people would understand. If you haven't heard it, then it may not make a lot of sense. But he went after him really, really, really strong. Like, so much so that even if, like, had this been legit and he'd been a legit reporter going after someone, it's almost like, wow, dude, you're just a little too overzealous. I realize this guy might be, you know, jiving and two-stepping and trying to cover his tracks, but you're borderline rude at this point. And I don't think that's what they want to do with their basically babyface play-by-play guy, is to make him seem rude. It's just a little too much there, a little critique. But that did lead to our third match of the night, Wade Barrett defeating Randy Orton in 8 minutes and 42 seconds. Before this match could even start, Del Rio slides into the ring while Orton's posing on the turnbuckle and tried to attack him, but Orton beat him up and chased him out of the ring. Del Rio left, went backstage, they went to the floor. I apologize. They went to the floor. Del Rio was getting his ass kicked, but that allowed Ricardo Rodriguez to distract Orton, and that allowed Del Rio to slam Orton into the ring post. Del Rio is then kind of chased off by the official. He leaves smiling. Orton has to recover. Wade Barrett standing in the ring, all smiles as they went to the commercial break. And when we came back, we had the start of the match. It was a joint in progress. Finish on this come. Orton has, you know, hits his rope DDT, starts setting up for the RKO. Del Rio comes out on the top of the ramp. Ricardo Rodriguez runs down to the apron, jumps up on the apron. Orton knocks him down, but that allows Barrett to grab him from behind and roll him up for a surprise victory. Barrett hightails it out of the ring, leaves Orton standing there, awful pissed off, and went to commercial break from there. A good match, about 8 minutes, 42 seconds, again, of televised time. I don't know how much was before the match or wasn't shown of the match before we came back on TV, how much from the bell to that was. It looked like to be a lot of time, maybe a minute or two. But a good match, no real surprise there. Wade Barrett very confident in the ring. Randy Orton, once again, doing great matches, doing business for young guys who need the win. I liked everything about this. I would have liked a little bit stronger Barrett victory, but I'm not going to complain about that because it was a good win for him. They had him on the right trajectory. They need to kind of round out his character. The knuckle brawler is a good starting point, but they need to continue to round out his character. I think quality wins over guys like Orton will only help him. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring. If they can find the right character to stick with him, I think the guy's got money written all over him. You don't want Orton to just get beat clean necessarily. So they protected him well here, and that led into the brawl backstage we'll talk about in a second. But you like the match as well, I can tell from your report.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. I did think they gave Orton about 140 excuses for why he lost. But
for sure.
That's neither here or there, I guess. I mean, Barrett got the win, and that's what's most important. And I agree with you, and I think I put it in my report that, Barrett's character does need some depth, or they really kind of toss him into something. In the deep end where he's going to be expected to carry, a world title feud or something. But I think he's on the right path, and they're going to get him there. And if they go a little bit slower and avoid talking to the wolves at the main event like they did during his first main event run with Nexus, I think they'll be better off. And, a slower build for him is probably what's necessary to kind of regain some credibility after how badly he got buried on his way out the last time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him just beat people up for a while, just while they try to figure out his character, just let him go out there and kill people. I like him being kind of attached here to Del Rio and Orton because I think those guys have star power, and just being involved peripherally in that makes a lot of sense. It keeps Orton and Del Rio away from each other as their feud continues. He's not Del Rio's hired gun, but he kind of is. He can cut a good promo on, especially when it's over, if he can cut a good promo on, I didn't do it for Del Rio, I didn't do it for the money, I did it because I just wanted to beat up Randy Orton, and maybe transition into a good feud with Orton that he can come out with a couple of clean wins off of. I mean, the guy could be ready to go, but like you said, they've got to bring some depth to that character, but hell, how many guys on the roster could we say that about? They really need to bring depth to their character to make them better. at the commercial, we got a really nice Komen breast cancer awareness thing. John Cena giving him $1 million check in the ring, and just all kinds of stuff, really, you know, putting over the relationship between Susan G. Komen and WWE. I'm interested to see if next week they have the pink rope or not. Breast Cancer Awareness Month was October. It was finished on Wednesday, the day after the show was taped on Tuesday, so it made sense for it to continue to be pink this week on Friday. So I'm interested to see if that goes away next week, if they decide to keep it for a while. They've raised a lot of good money. Komen has had a lot of good things to say about their partnership with WWE. So kudos to them on that. It's kind of funny. We love to beat up WWE when they do stuff bad, and I think a lot of people, you know, ignore some of the things they do like this, like the tribute to the troops, which is not as big of a deal now, but when they would go over to Iraq and they would show these videos of, well, on this day we all had to take cover because we were getting shelled. You know, I think a lot of that is kind of glossed over, and I want to make sure that I point out that when they do great things like this, they should be honored for that as well. But after that was over, we cut backstage where Del Rio is talking to Matt Stryker. Del Rio starts the whole, he's the new Apex Predator in WWE, but then Orton came running up from behind and attacked him. They started fighting their way through catering. They trashed the beginning of the table. I wondered if they were going to end up in the food, because all the wrestlers were back there. That's where they eat. And they were all kind of standing around. I just knew that people were going to end up hungry because they were going to trash the food. They didn't. They trashed kind of the first table with the silverware and the plates and napkins and those sorts of things are. And then we got the first of three moments in this brawl that this one didn't bother me so much, but it is one of three kind of comedy moments that frustrated me on some level. This one the least offensive, and not really all necessarily offensive. This one, if this has been the only one, I can let this one pass. You get Del Rio reaching for a coffee pot, supposedly burns his hands. The pot is so hot that he's screaming about his hands, ow, 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 ow. Orton grabs a couple of handfuls of napkins, grabs it, goes to throw it on Del Rio, misses and hits Ricardo. And Rick Rod's over there screaming because he's just had boiling coffee poured on him. I'm okay with that. Again, if that's kind of the end of it, but it's not. They continue to brawl. At one point, Orton knocks Del Rio down. He walks over, grabs a pot of either chili or tomato sauce or something red, some sort of red sauce, pours that on Rodriguez, who should be seeking medical attention because the pot was so hot it burned Del Rio's hand, but the coffee that was thrown in his face was hot enough just to make him scream, but not hot enough to actually hurt him. Apparently, in any way, because he's sitting there waiting for Orton to dump this tomato sauce or chili or whatever the hell it was on top of it. That was the second comedy moment that frustrated me. And then Del Rio and Orton fight over to the dessert table. Orton tries to shove Del Rio's face into one of the cakes. Del Rio grabs the table, prevents it from happening. They have the big moment where he's pushing his head down and Del Rio's fighting back. But Del Rio ends up hitting an elbow to get away from it. Orton throws him over a table, and Del Rio escapes. Matt Stryker comes up and says, Randy, quickly, can I get your thoughts on what just happened? Which made me want to just choke Stryker out right there. Everything peripherally around this brawl, as good as the brawl was, and it was a good brawl. They brawled all over table spots and all kinds of stuff in there. Just these things around it really frustrated me, and Stryker's ignorant question, can you give me your thoughts on what just happened, Orton? Randy looked at him for a second, grabbed him, slammed his face into the cake with all the guys in the back laughing at Stryker as he stood there with cake all over his face, and they went into commercial. Again, Jake, I like the brawl, but those three comedy spots, and again, the first one I could let go if Ricardo had disappeared and they did something later where he was burned on Monday or whenever they revisited, that's fine. But when you throw the tomato sauce or whatever it was on top of the cake spot with Matt Stryker, to me, those things took away from what was otherwise a very, very good brawl.
Yeah, I enjoyed the brawl. I thought there was actually kind of four comedy spots because I laughed when literally Del Rio was talking and then you see Orton turn the corner and there's a good 10 seconds where Orton is like rapidly approaching from behind Del Rio and he doesn't even notice. And it's just like this weird moment where you see Stryker actually look at Orton and doesn't tell Del Rio a thing, and then Orton just punches him in the face, and then the brawl started. But the coffee thing was bizarre because Del Rio touched the coffee decanter, and he mistake like it burned his hand. And then Orton grabs, like, a stack of napkins and doesn't even, like, bother to protect his thumbs. He just has his thumbs on the bare metal when he's throwing this on Ricardo. So the whole thing kind of was kind of flubbed. But, I mean, I guess it worked. You know, they worked a little bit of comedy into the brawl. But, I mean, it would have carried a much more serious tone if they would have kept the random comedy out of it. And maybe, you know, maybe that's not the tone they want to take with this story, but that's the tone that at least I was hoping for.
Yeah, I just, you know, the call, like I said, was just so bizarre. Because he starts screaming, and I read, you know, your report, you said with him screaming, it was kind of funny. And I don't dispute that fact, but it's, you know, he just got, again, you get, like you said, Del Rio grabs the canter, my burns on, he's screaming about it burning. And then Ricardo takes like 6 gallons of coffee to the face that's supposedly so hot that Del Rio can't even touch the pot, and yet he's still able to sit there and take the tomato sauce spot. What the hell? Just a little bit of logic here would have gone a long way, but I'm sure that's asking too much. But yeah, a good brawl, good heat on the feud, just those couple of moments. And I don't know if Matt Stryker is getting punished or what, but everybody was laughing pretty hard. I don't know who it was, but right at the very end, right when they went to commercial, somebody in the back got a good look at him, and you could just hear him go, ah. I mean, they were really ragging on him in the back. So I don't know if they were told to do that, if they were just laughing at him out of general principle, if he was an asshole and he was getting punished and people were enjoying. I don't know what all that was, but they were having a lot of fun at Stryker's expense after he was sitting there with cake all in his face. And next time they should get some sort of whipped cream pie or something, because it just was like a little bit of cake in his face. It didn't even look as impressive as I thought it was going to. After commercial, David Otunga, great colleague. Colleague kills him in 1:30. WWE 13 ad airs. Matthew starts plugging another Raw rebound because, hey, one is not enough. And then we get to the weirdest moment of the night. Natalya tells Kali, she walks to him after the commercial and says how impressed she was with him for beating Otunga, and then starts talking about how big his hands are. Did that creep you out as much as it creeped me out? Like, I was like, ooh, what did we just see here?
Yeah, I don't know where they're going with that. It was kind of creepy the way she said it and then looked into his eyes and then walked away kind of silently. I don't know. It was bizarre, and if they're setting up some kind of Natalya Great Khali love story, I think we're all going to have to keep our cyanide cap with Sandy.
It reminds me of, I don't remember what the story was, but I do remember back in the Attitude Era, God, there was like a spin the wheel thing, maybe. I can't remember who it was. Dawn Marie, maybe. I'm trying to put it together in my brain. People know my memory doesn't work like that. But maybe you remember, wasn't there a moment where Big Show was backstage? They were drawing balls out of something for, maybe it was a Royal Rumble or something, and Big Show started talking about how his fingers were like thick sausages. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I recall.
Yeah, it's like, that's the first thing that came to mind. It's like, but they can't go quite that non-PG with it, so they just have to imply it and walk away. I don't know, it was just kind of weird, and when it was over, I thought, what the hell did I just see there? But when you went back to the ring after that for our fifth match of the night, R-Truth defeating Justin Gabriel in 4:04. Finish on this comes, Justin Gabriel goes for a springboard kick, but Truth ducks it, and then hits him with pay dirt, essentially, for the, I think, called the lie detector now, for the win. On a good match, but kind of pointless, wasn't it, Jake? And this is something I gave a miss in the hit list, because why did R-Truth win? Justin Gabriel's in at least a mild U.S. Championship title feud right now, so why not give him the win over a guy like Truth? Truth's not going to be hurt by the loss. You give Gabriel a little something going into his feud with Antonio Cesaro, but instead we just get this random match with a random Truth victory that didn't help anybody.
Yeah, that's what kind of caught me off guard. I didn't really understand where they were going with it. I mean, I guess it gave these guys some television time, but I mean, that's really the best thing you could say for it, because the match, I mean, while it wasn't bad, it really wasn't anything spectacular, and there wasn't really much storytelling going on because there was no feud involved, and so it was just kind of a random win and a handshake afterwards, and all the announcers could think to say was that, well, both of these men have bright futures, you know, it's like, well, okay, then why the, you know, there was no consequence to this at all, so I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't mind a random match in and of itself, but, you know, make it for a purpose. Give it, you know, if they had given Gabriel the win here, I would have gone, oh, okay, this was random, but he's in this title match. R-Truth's a good win for him. That makes sense to me. But for the Truth to then go over, just didn't fit for me for some reason.
With these random matches that they seem to happen so often, whether it's Raw or SmackDown or wherever, you know, if a GM would come out and say, well, we're instituting a new policy, if you win a match, you get this salary, and if you lose a match, you get this salary, and at least it would give these basic, you know, some monetary incentive to have, you know, at least pick up victories on television, and it would make cheating seem all that more dastardly. Just some basic storyline would make, you know, even these random matches seem at least somewhat important, but they don't even take the time to do something simple.
Yeah, it's true. You know, there's ways to, you can put in something very, very simple. You can, without having to be, you know, absurd about it, you can just go out there, like you said, and, you know, if you win, you move up the ladder. If you lose, you know, it's like they don't want to do any effort at all for some of this stuff. A fun match, it was a 4-minute match. I mean, it's as good as you get on SmackDown as a general rule for these, you know, 2-3-4-minute matches, but the wrong guy won. I'm not upset about it, but I just question why you do it. Why not give Gabriel the win? Truth wouldn't be hurt by the loss. Gabriel would gain something by it, and it makes the next match he has with Cesaro, which I assume we will get at Survivor Series, because the Intercontinental Championship is tied up in the actual Survivor Series match, as is the WWE Championship, as is the Tag Team Championships. So all you've got, the U.S. title and the World Championship sitting out there that you can make a match with, and I guess the Divas title too, but that doesn't count. Why not give this guy a win? I mean, if they're going with somebody else, Cesaro, I guess that makes sense, but why give Truth a win? I'm praying to God it's not R-Truth and Antonio Cesaro. That would be a disaster, I think, because Cesaro does not need to work with a comedy heel. He needs to work with a legitimate heel. We get the Raw rebound. Yes, we already had the big Raw video, but screw it, we'll have another one. AJ and John Cena, a fair storyline. Nothing major there. They cut backstage to Big Show and Miz, so we're getting ready. Miz says we're back together again. Show Miz, the most dominating tag team in WWE history. Just follow my lead like you did before, and everything will be fine. Big Show said that last time they were partners, but this time he's Miz's superior, so he better just do his job. He said, if you don't listen to me, I will knock you out. Now get my belt. And Miz grabbed the belt and handed it to him. Show walked off. I just got to say, I thought the show was great here. I love this character of his that we saw originally kind of with Mark Henry, and it's been progressing up to this point. He just totally punked Miz, and in this case, it wasn't in a bad way that makes Miz lose anything. It makes sense that you back down from the 7-foot, 400-pound giant. But I love this character of his. I thought he was fantastic here. And this very, very short, very few words, but it's working. He is making this character work great, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's what you would expect a monster to be, you know, and I think that, you know, while it may seem, you know, a little obvious, you know, for a guy like Big Show, I think that's the character that he works best in, and it seems to be paying off. Because, you know, all the time he spent kind of accumulating experience on the microphone has made this giant, dominant character seem all the much, you know, all that more sincere and all that much better than it was, you know, years ago. So I think they're moving in the right direction with the show. It's the most interested I've been in this character in a long time.
Yeah, it's, like I said, this was just a very short promo here from him, but I thought it worked really well. After the commercial, we get a recap of what happened with Barrett and Orton from earlier, including Stryker getting his face put in the cake. They hype next week on the live Tuesday SmackDown, which will not be live, but we will be covering it. But it will not be live. It will be taped in England, and Orton and Del Rio will be in a Falls Count Anywhere match. That UK crowd will be hot for that match, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I think they'll probably be even hotter for the Sheamus and Wade Barrett match. It's supposed to happen on, was it Main Event next week? I think they're having that match. So
yes.
I think that one's also taped the same day. So there's going to be a lot of good action going on in the UK next week.
Yeah, it'll be a good week for WWE television next week, because even if they don't have great shows, that UK crowd is so starved for the product that they go nuts over anything. So, yeah, definitely check out Main Event next week. That ought to be great. Jake and I will be covering Tuesday night. Both of us political junkies, and yet we will have to cover and then turn around and go over to the election after that. Again, I will also be watching the Linda McMahon Senate seat that night as well. I'll file a report as soon as we know how that's been called. Don't bet on Linda winning. And also, for those of you who just went, yay, now we can go back to TV14, yeah, that's not going to happen either. It's not Linda McMahon's campaign that's driving that. It's certainly a factor. I won't dispute that, but it is not what's driving the PG. And trust me, if she loses, even though if she may run again, I doubt it, but suppose it'll be 4 years until she can run again as a senator or for a Senate seat. But don't bet on there being any changes when she loses Tuesday night, which I do expect her to do unless there's some major October surprise over the next couple of days. But then we get Sheamus. Everybody makes their ring entrance. Sheamus, Kofi, Miz, and Big Show. Seventh and final match of the night. Big Show and the Miz defeat Sheamus and Kofi Kingston. The story here is that Sheamus still cannot do anything with Big Show. He worked over Kofi a lot, kept talking junk to Sheamus. Big Show did, would make faces at him, never really got their hands on each other. So that, of course, right at the very, very end, Sheamus knocked Big Show to the outside. When he was not the legal man, the ref's trying to get Sheamus back to the corner. Kofi jumped on Miz in the corner to do, I guess, punches or something. But Big Show popped up on the apron, knocked Miz out, knocked Kofi out, which allowed Miz to cover before Sheamus could do anything. The 1-2-3 victory. Big Show beats it. You know, I mean, he doesn't run away, but he just grabs the belt, takes off. Miz ends up eating a bro kick from Sheamus to close the show. Sheamus looking, you know, strong but frustrated that he couldn't do much with Big Show. They told a good story. You don't have a time on here. I didn't tape the show or time the show because I wasn't covering live.
It was like nine or so minutes.
About 10 minutes, something like that. It's fine. It's about 10 minutes of TV time, so. A pretty good match from these four. It's, nothing to write home about, but worth sitting through if you're looking for something to watch that's new. Again, the story here, Sheamus frustrated that he can't get his hands or on Big Show, or when he does, can't do a lot with him, which, again, I just hope will continue to lead to him being an edgier character going forward and getting frustrated with what's going on with Show. And I don't want him to turn heel again, but I would like to see him move more in that direction and be a lot like a Stone Cold character. I don't think he can repeat Stone Cold. I don't want him to be in the brawls with Vince McMahon or whoever the authority figure is. That's not what I mean. But the reality of that Stone Cold, much like Randy Orton does now too, does bad things. You know, I want Sheamus to be that badass who really does bad things like Stone Cold did, but still got cheered for it. I think that's where Sheamus needs to be, and this is at least a step in the right direction. So a fun match to close the show. I know you liked it, and I know you liked what they're doing with everybody. Jake?
Yeah, you still there?
Okay, yeah, I lost you for a second.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, we'll back it up. I'll cut all this out. But what I was saying was, if you know, I know you like it, and that you like what they're doing with everybody.
Yeah, no, I do. I think what they've managed to accomplish in in a short time since the pay per view with Sheamus and Big Show, it has been very well done. And I do like Sheamus telling the frustration. I think his character was far too cocky as world heavyweight champion, and it seemed to, create that atmosphere where he was just clowning around too much, and it took away from, what had been a very serious and more of a brawler type character. So they're heading back in the right direction with him. They're definitely headed in the right direction with the Big Show. Kofi and the Miz are involved in that Survivor Series elimination match, so, this was some propellant for what they're trying to do, too. So overall, the main event definitely kept a lot of things rolling and kept the feud kind of juggling up in the air. So I enjoyed the match. The way that the finish happened with the knockout punch was expected, but at the same time, I think it was the right way to go. And letting the heels pick up a win here will definitely help these feuds going forward. So overall, it was kind of an average edition of SmackDown. There were some ridiculous moments, but overall, they managed to accomplish quite a bit in 2 hours here.
I thought it was a pretty good show. Not one that's going to set the world on fire, but it moves quick. You and I have talked many times about how you can tell how good the show is by how fast it's over. And yes, it takes 2 hours every time, but trust me, folks, when you're having to cover and analyze this thing, sometimes 2 hours can be six. Sometimes 2 hours can be like 35 minutes. And this was closer to the 35 minute time. It wasn't wide open and just when it was over, wow, what a great episode. But an effective episode where they moved a lot of stories forward. They made a lot of guys look good. Some things that didn't make sense. Again, Justin Gabriel taking the loss. The whole backstage garbage with Teddy Long. Some of the comedy spots in the food brawl backstage with Orton and Del Rio. But they've got good stuff going forward. They're building fast to SummerSlam, or excuse me, Survivor Series. Always do that. They're building fast to Survivor Series because it's only 2 weeks away at this point. So they have they've got a lot of work to do in that period of time. They're doing a very good job. If they could continue to book at this speed for everything they do during the other builds for other pay-per-views, they have a much better product. But good show. Check it out if you haven't done so already. I got nothing else to add on the show. Jake, you got anything before we get out of here?
No, just everybody enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll catch you on Tuesday.
Yep, Jake and I will be back. We'll probably... audio is going to kind of be up in the air. It kind of depends on what happens on Wednesday. Because, again, we won't do it Tuesday night because of the election and everything that's going on there. But we will have coverage for you. We'll see how audio goes. No promises, but maybe we'll have it next week. Maybe we won't. We'll see. But if not, we will certainly be back the week after that for the Go Home to Survivor Series. And, again, it's not the only audio that you can get on the site. Sign up to be a .NET member, get access to all the audio I talked about at the top of the show. Again, I can't stress enough how much cooler the new forum is. I mean, you got to admit, Jake, the forum update, when it came as a surprise, I'm really impressed with what the guy who has helped us update that has done with the site.
Yeah, I agree. The virtual bookie stuff is really neat, and some of the other new features are very nice. You know, the new format is a lot more... conducive to mobile browsers and stuff, people that are using it on the go. So overall, I think it was a much needed and very good upgrade that we managed to put on there. So kudos to the forum guys.
Yep. And new member side app, new audio app, new just all kinds of great stuff. Become a .NET member today. Head over to ProWrestling.net. Click on that right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. $7.50. Try it out for 30 days. If you don't like it, then I promise you I will wish I could send you your $7.50 back, but I won't. But definitely check it out, folks. It's a good time to be a .NET member. We are heading quickly into WrestleMania season. We're only a couple of months away from the Royal Rumble. The Rock facing someone for the WWE Championship is going to be a wild first of the year when it rolls around. Jake and I might be back next week, if not again the week after that, for SmackDown Audio. Join us Tuesday night for the live, but not really live, SmackDown Super Show. Again, that headlined by Randy Orton versus Del Rio in a Falls Count Anywhere match. We will have double coverage for you that night. Until then, everyone, thank you so much for listening and your support of the .NET site. Have a great weekend, and take care.